I enjoyed both of your presentations. Mine is a little bit different. Mine is looking at educating nurses for leadership in public health and hopefully preparing the next generation for working with nursing leaders such as yourselves. I'm Doris Glick. I'm from the University of Virginia. In full disclosure, I just retired about 2 months ago, so I am free to do things that I want to do and no longer doing things I have to do, but I find that one of the things I really want to do is public health nursing and global health and stay active with APHA. But I've done a lot of work at UVA in public health nursing and want to acknowledge my colleague in public health and best public health buddy, Dr. Pam Kohlbach, who is here today. And Pam and I have really done a lot of the work to maintain public health nursing in the last 10 years at our school. Catherine Kane is our coordinator of site mental health nursing and has been working with us in recent years. And I should have said Pam is our coordinator of public health, our public health nursing track in the master's program. Edie Barbaro is a psych mental health faculty. Kathy Cox coordinates our health systems management track. Hannah Walker is our staff person who works with our program. And Hannah Beth Clymer Showalter is a graduate student who has been doing a lot of work with us and helping us with our evaluation data. Two people who aren't on here who I would like to acknowledge are Emily Hauenstein, who has helped us with the rural conceptualization piece of the work that we've done, and Dr. Bonnie Jerome D'Amelio, who left UVA some years ago and is now working in New Jersey. But Bonnie was very instrumental in helping us learn online education and develop, change our courses into modalities that were appropriate for online education. None of us have any financial relationships to disclose. We've been funded by two grants from HRSA, one that began in 2003 for leadership in community and public health and health systems management. That was really the basis for much of the work that we've been doing for the last 10 years. And then a second grant that was funded in 2009 and is still ongoing for nursing leadership in rural healthcare. As I look back, and I really see this presentation as a reflection on what we have accomplished in the last 10 years, and I'd like to conclude with some personal observations and perhaps cautions about the future. But in summing up what we've been able to accomplish in this time, we have increased enrollment in public health nursing and health systems management. And low enrollment in those programs, in the master's program, was really the motivation to begin doing some new and innovative things to increase and reach out to more students. We've developed and institutionalized online courses in our master's program. We've reached nurses in rural areas, and especially serving disadvantaged populations. And our university in Charlottesville, Virginia, is right on the edge of Appalachia. So we do have a large rural area to reach out to. We've added psychiatric mental health specialty to our online options, and we have revised and enhanced our curriculum in all three of these specialties to emphasize rural health, and we have developed a new course in rural health that many of our students take as an elective that focuses on health issues and priorities in rural areas. We've incorporated concepts of transformational leadership and try to give our students experiences in leadership. And we have emphasized cultural competence and appreciation. During this time, we've also developed our DNP program at UVA, and we have developed a web-enhanced format for that program that probably would not have happened if we hadn't begun online courses some years before and gained acceptance by our faculty colleagues for that modality. And then finally, we've expanded and gained acceptance for online format throughout the School of Nursing. When we first proposed doing online courses back in 2001 and 2002, it was not warmly embraced by many of our colleagues. So we really had to prove over time that we could maintain quality and have good courses and good outcomes using online. As I said, enrollment was our original motivator. The number of students in public health and health systems management in the master's program was very low, as this slide documents. We were down to 15 students. And it was at that time that we decided to pool our efforts because we recognized that we had a lot of content and curriculum in common. And by working together, we could help each other and try to move forward and create some economy of scale, if you will. So we began the first HRSA grant in 2003 and were able to increase our enrollment substantially from 15 students in 2002 to 53 total students in 2006. At that time, our psych mental health program was also having some enrollment issues, and they were very interested in what we were doing online. So they joined with us when we wrote the second HRSA grant, and now we have 81 students in those three specialty areas in our master's program. So we have a lot of students, and they're very good students. We're really blessed with good students. It's probably the best thing we have going for us. But we have a lot of them, and sometimes we suffer from our own success. As I was preparing this, I wanted to look back at online education and see where it has come from, and I think I was just trying to understand myself why it seemed so new and innovative when we started in 2001, and now it's widely accepted. And at that time, our reason for doing online was to extend the geographic reach of our program and to offer programs for students who otherwise would lack access to graduate education. And the data really shows that nurses who are educated in rural areas or in their home communities are more likely to stay in those communities than those that leave for education. And again, what we were trying to do was strengthen the nursing workforce in rural areas. So by offering them education that they didn't have to move away from home to be able to get, we were able to reach more nurses in those areas. And also, most of our master's students are young and middle-aged adults who have families. Many have to continue working. And they really work very, very hard. And this does help them. They can be working on their course in the middle of the night if they want to. The way we do most of our courses, we do the assignments one day a week, and the students have a week to do that assignment, do the readings, participate in the discussion, and they can do it in their own time frame within that week. So that works out very well for nurses who have to work. But oops. In looking back, it was 1989 that the University of Phoenix established their first online campus. I think most of us hadn't heard about online education in that time, but what I wanted to do was document that it was out there. It was beginning about that time. By 1997, the education literature, and I just did some overview checking of the literature to see what was out there at that time. And in 1997, it was referred to as an experiment with online discussions. Another article in 1998 referred to online education as an emerging pedagogy. A survey done in 2002 showed that at that time, at least one online course was taken by 11% of students. And by 2011, at least 31% of students in higher education had taken at least one online course. Today, higher education institutions say that online learning is a critical part of their long-term strategy. As I said, when we developed this, we were trying to reach out to nurses in rural areas. We were not trying to make a profit, and therein lies my cautionary tale that I will get to at the end of this presentation. But it was 2003 when we initiated our courses for public health and health systems management. Originally, we used Blackboard as our platform for online courses, and over time, because of the funding and the university's priorities, we transitioned to CoLab as our platform. We do have students attend class one day at the beginning and one day at the end of each course, and this is our way of keeping in touch with our students, having our students get to know us, and more importantly, perhaps, having the students get to know each other and developing some identity as a group and in their specialty areas. When Psych joined us, it was because in their clinical courses, they felt that they needed face-to-face contact with their students because of the sensitive work they're doing with people, and they also needed a private way of communicating with them visually. Improved technology made it possible to do that. There were more secure ways of having visual contact with students. So by 2009, they were able to offer their courses online and do their clinical conferences using visual interaction. We now use more visual interaction with our students. And as technology improves, I think that the line between online and in-class education is beginning to blur. We find that faculty who have in-class classes will use the web to broadcast that course or that particular class for students who are not able to be there that day. So it gets to be blurred. In 2007, we initiated our DNP program, and by that time, our faculty were more accepting of online modalities and developed executive format. And in this program, we have our students come for one full day or 2 days, depending on the course, for each course that they take at the beginning and end. So they come for about a week in August and December and January and May. And then they come one Friday a month in between. And that seems to be working well for that program. We had conceptual threads, and I wanted to look at the evolution of the conceptual threads through our model. But in 2003, we began with our original model for public health nursing, and this was adapted from ASTDN. But it looks at the core functions of public health in the center and then superimposes the public health nursing and essential public health services around it. As time went on, we expanded that to include the public health nursing competencies superimposed on our original model of essential public health services and core public health functions. And then in 2009, we developed the transformational nursing leadership model in rural health. This does not build on the original model of public health nursing, as obviously, but rather it looks at systems in rural communities. And I'm sorry it's small to get it to all fit on one slide, but we do look at systems factors of individuals, families, and populations and community factors, and look at issues of access to care, consumer-provider interaction, local, regional systems of care, quality systems of delivery, and system-level outcomes, and look at that in the context of organizational characteristics and processes. And then transformational nursing leadership, we've identified attributes and skills for transformational nursing leadership, that looks at both population-based assessment and population outcomes. And the attributes for transformational learning leadership that this model specifies are inspirational, committed, egalitarian, ethical, and involved. And the skills that go with that are shared problem-solving, risk-taking, motivation, challenging the status quo, soliciting new ideas, stimulating creativity and collaboration and partnership. And I think these are very consistent with the first two presentations that we heard and your exemplars of public health nurses doing these things. So that brings me to looking at what's happening in higher education today and in online education. And I've been, let me say, what I've been talking about is the work that we've done at UVA, and it's the work of me and my colleagues. My conclusions are mine alone, so if I say anything controversial, I feel like I can do that now. But one of the things I've been really concerned about is hearing about MOOCs. And MOOCs are these massive open online courses that are put out there for, some of them are very good courses, but they're put out there for free for anyone to access. And this has very good, obviously, public appeal, and in spreading education, it's like free healthcare, free education, this is wonderful. But my concerns about it are, if people are getting their education in this way, how do you validate? How do you know that they've actually achieved some competency and mastered the content? And who develops those courses? If they're out there for free, what does this say about intellectual property and the effort that went into putting those courses out there? They're all, I think one of the first people who put his course out there for the public was a Stanford professor, and he made it available for free for the world, and that's lovely, but he wasn't free. His work and time and effort were behind that. And I heard a commentary on NPR not too long ago, and they were saying, well, education can be free, so why should students be paying so much for college education? Look at all this free education that's out there. And I think that is one concern. What is this going to do to faculty? What is this going to do to our accepted models and long-term models of higher education that have been working? And secondly, is the profit-making efforts. Publisher buys online learning company Dell Tech for $220 million. These are headlines this month from the October was last month, wasn't it? From the Chronicle of Higher Education. But this is current, this is real, this is recent, and people who want to make a profit are beginning to look at higher education. And my concern is, I think those of us who have been around for a little while have watched profit-making models in healthcare, and we know what that has done to accessibility issues and quality of care issues. And I feel like we're beginning to see this in higher education, and I do have some concerns about it. So I think some of our cautions for the future are that as nurses and as educators and practicing nurses, we need to use caution about the entrepreneurship that's taking over existing models of education and for-profit models that have the potential to sap resources and make education unaffordable for many nurses. If somebody's making a profit out of it, then that money is going for more than just paying the faculty who do the work to teach the courses, but somebody is making a profit out of it. And is that really where we want to go? I think it has the potential to undermine quality. I think it has the potential to misuse faculty. I hear comments about, well, with online, one person can teach courses with hundreds of students. Well, our experience has been if we have more than 20 or 25 students in an online course, it becomes untenable. You can't present quality education with that number of students. So in conclusion, I will say that I think our challenges for the future are to develop and expand models for education that make more optimal use of technology. And as I said, it's really expanding what we can do and how we can reach people while avoiding the pitfalls of profit making and abuse, and maintaining the quality and quality of faculty working with students to assure that they actually do master the quality of the content that we need them to know. So thank you. I We'll be glad to answer any questions when we're finished.